All right, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Daled Amud Bet. The Mishnah says, "Ein almana nifreit minichsei yitomim ela bishvua," that an almana can only collect from the nichasim of the yitomim, meaning that her ketubah that she wants to collect because she is an almana now, she's a widow, and if she wants to leave the estate and not take mizonot from the estate and collect her ketubah, she has to take a shvuah to the yitomim that she has yet to collect any of her ketubah, or she hasn't withheld any of the assets of the estate in lieu of payment for her ketubah. In order to be certain that the woman hasn't taken anything, we require that she take a shvuah. Nimnu'u milahashbia. They stopped having her take a shvuah, which isn't clear why they stopped having her take a shvuah. The Gemara seems to indicate, which we'll see in a couple of minutes, that it had to do with the problems or the severity of the Shavuot, and they were reluctant to have the woman take a Shavuah, because if she's lying, the ramifications or repercussions were too severe. On the other hand, the Rambam, in the Perush HaMishnayot, in describing why they stopped it, says here, "Lefi sheim ra'u, shehi mikila b'shavuot," that the women did not take seriously the Shavuot, "v'tishbal sheker," and they had no problem taking a Shavuot sheker. So then, they were mitakein, as we're going to see in a second, to use nidarim. And from the Rambam, it seems that the issue of nidarim, or the dinim of nidarim, were much more severe to them than those of shvuot. And therefore, she was willing to take a shvuot sheker, but wasn't willing to take a neder that would end up being b'sheker. Now, despite the fact that min haTorah is clear that a shvuot is much more chamur than a neder, but we're not dealing with the Torah's view of it. We're dealing with how people relate to these items. And from the Rambam, it seems like they were mekil rosh. They were not so serious about Shavuot, but they were much more serious about Nidarim. Tosafot later on discusses the issue of why that may be, or different mechanisms that we could have used that are not used over here. And one of Tosafot's main points is that people are fearful of something that is continuously asur. A person is willing to violate an isur at one time and just say, okay, I did something wrong and I'm done with it, I can put it behind me. But if something is continuously problematic, then a person will be fearful of entering into some sort of agreement or neder that will bind them for the long term. So here again, that might be true with regards to a shvuah. The shvuah sheker here is a one-time thing that she takes and she lies about it and then it's done. On the other hand, the nature of the takana here, Hidkin Rabbi Gamliel Zakein, Shedei Nuderet liyitomim kol ma sheyirtzu begovak tubata, that the yitomim can make a demand on her that she take a neder, and through that neder she will be able to collect her ketubah. So the nature of the neder is that if you are lying, then you will not be able to partake of these items for the rest of your life. So that is a persistent or consistent isur, and that the woman would be much more reluctant to do, or knowing that every time she now eats afterwards, she's going to be bound by this neder. That's something that they were more afraid of or more reluctant to take. And therefore, the neder had more power with them than maybe a shvuah. Or Tosafot compares different types of nederim that we could have used and says that we're looking for something that has long-range impact on the woman because that's something that they were fearful of. As we note here, that Hidkin Rabbi Gamliel Zakein is similar to the refrain that we had in the previous Mishnah, that Rabbi Gamliel Zakein was the one who was mitakein these items. Ha'idim chutmim al haget mipnei tukun olam. Later on, there's a Tosfot on Lamed Vov Amar Aleph, we won't see it today's daf. The Tosfot over here had a girsa v'ha'idim, a chutmim al haget, which is Ova b'chibur over here, has ramification as to who said this part of the Mishnah. If you have a Vava Chibur, then it would be attributed to Rabbi Gamliel as a Kain, that he was the one who was mitakein this item. Tosafot wants to take it out, the Vav, and says that it shouldn't belong there the way that we have in our Mishnah without a Vav, which is indicative of the fact that this is not Rabbi Gamliel as a Kain's Takana, but a broader Takana, which is Eidim Chotim al Get Vipnei Tikkun Olam, that the Eidim sign on the Get because of Tikkun Olam. This is in line with the Shita of Rabbi Elazar, that Eidei Misira Karte, that the effectiveness of the get is through the edim who witnessed the Mesirat get, and the only reason that we have signatories to the get is mipnei tikkun olam, so that we're able to verify or validate the get without actually finding the edim mesira, like we've spoken about numerous times before. V'hilel hitein pruzbo mipnei tikkun olam, And Hillel instituted Prusbol because of Tikkun Olam. I'm seeing the connection here, and for the remainder of the perek, is this concept of Tikkun Olam, that Tikkun Olam caused or was the premise for many of these takanot, starting here with Prusbol, but we'll see other takanot through the perek, not necessarily to do the Gittin. This is a segue out of Gittin itself into other topics, but because of their common denominator, which is that they're all Mipnei Tikkun Olam, they're found in this perek. We already saw on Daf Lamed Gimel that there might be a connection between Prusbol and Gittin with regards to the Bitul HaGet, where Rav Nachman said that just like by Prusbol you only need two in order to have the Prusbol B'dayanim, so too by the Bitul HaGet you only have to do it in front of two. So then there may be a more of a halachic connection besides the just topical connection here with regards to Prusbol. But now Gemara says, "My Iria Almana." What is unique here about the Almana? Meaning that anybody who wants to be Poreya Chob, anybody who wants to collect from Yitomim, has to take a Shvua in order to collect from the Yitomim. So why is the Mishnah here focused on the Almana and the plight of the Almana? Afilu Kulei Almanami. Anybody who has to collect from the Yitomim has to take a Shvua. She's not any more unique than any other collector that is coming to make a claim against the estate. Daha Kaimalon, Habaldi Parah, that someone who wants to collect from the estate through the Yitomim has to take a Shvua. You're not allowed to collect from them without a Shvua. Again, both for the protection of the Yitomim, as well as the fact that we have no way to verify a lot of this information because the person with whom the transaction happened passed away now, and therefore the only way for us to really verify it is to have them take a Shvua so that we know that they're collecting properly and that they haven't collected a portion of it already. They haven't taken some of the estate, somehow already gotten paid for what they were supposed to get paid. So it says, Amono itzrichale. By the Amono, we need a specific instruction or to tell us that she has to take a shvua. Sakadat chamina, we'd have thought, Mishum china, ikilu rabbanon gaba. That because of the chain, the rabbanon were meikil, that maybe the Amona should not take a shvua. Rashi, kedarko, bishas, says that the chain here is mishehei chain anashim beinei hanashim linasedahem. That the chain that we're speaking about here is that the women should not be reluctant to get married. That the women will know in the back end that they are protected. And since they are protected in the back end, they'll be willing to enter into the marriages knowing that whatever happens or whatever the outcome of this marriage is, that they will be in good hands. So that's the way Rashi means chain and has to do with the nature of ketubah, the nature of gerushin and amanot. So that the women knew or felt comfortable that they would always be taken care of. And therefore, they would enter into the marriage calmly and willingly. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot, not here, but in other places, note that the chein is the other way around. It's not from the men to find favor in the women's eyes, but the other way around. Because we know the principle that the Gemara has in many places, that more than a man wants to get married, the woman wants to get married. And therefore, the impetus for chein can't be the fact that we want to placate the women because their natural desire is to get married. And therefore, the chein has to be coming the other way around, which is that we have to engender the fact that these women will be appealing to their husbands. But that's not in the first place. That's not when they first get married, but it is when they are almanot. Once they are widowed afterwards, how do we ensure that these women have the ability to get remarried? They collect their ketubah. And their ability to collect their ketubah means that they have money, they have means, and therefore they are an appealing wife, especially in that day where the monetary matters were intertwined with the shiduchim. Therefore, this woman who has an estate or has some sort of collection out of the ketubah will be appealing to suitors after she is a widow. And that's what the chein that Tosafot says is being spoken about here. Either way, we would have thought that the Rabbonon would allow her to collect without a shvua, either for, according to Rashi, to make it easier for them to enter the marriage. They wouldn't be worried about this in the end of taking the shvua. Or for the Balei HaTosafot, that would ensure that she collect her ketubah in the end, so she'd be appealing to be remarried. Kamash Malon, the Mishnah tells us that despite that impetus of chein, they still demanded a shvua over here. And we will see why that is, that they were nimdu, why they still said that the woman has to take a shvua, because of the nature of her interaction with the estate, which brings her to the possibility of taking in a way that she doesn't think is stealing. So now the Gemara says, Nimnu'u min l'hashbi'ah. They stopped being mashbia, the women, as opposed to what we saw in the Rambam and the Perush Mishnayot, which was that didn't care about the Shavuot. Here the Gemara talks about the severity of a Shavuah and the implications of a Shavuah, which are dangerous. My Dama, ilei mimishum de Rav Kahana. If you say it's because of Rav Kahana, Dama Rav Kahana, Vamrila, Dama Rav Yudam Arav, Masib be'adam echad, b'shnei batzoret. There was this individual in years of famine, shivkid din azav etzel amana, that he deposited a gold coin with an amana, v'ninachato b'kad shel kemach. And she, in order to hide it, put it inside of her flour pitcher or wherever she stored her flour, she put the coin there to hide it. Remember their day, they don't have any safety deposit boxes, they don't have a way to secure possessions or gold or money. The Gemara itself says in other places that the only shmirah for kesef is bakarka, in the ground. That you have to dig up the ground, bury it in the ground, in order to safekeep anything that's precious or anything that is expensive. Again, they have no way to otherwise to secure these items. So people used to hide them and put them in places where people wouldn't think. So this is a place where people normally would not search for money, is inside of the flour. Va'afato bepat. She ended up, by accident, baking the coin into a loaf of bread. Benetanato le'ani. And she gave it to a poor person. The amim ba bala dinar. After some time, the person who had deposited the gold coin with her came to take it back. Vamarla havili dinari. Says, please give me back my coin. Amrale yehene samhamavet bechad mi banea shalota isha. Imneeneti mi dinarcha klum. She says that poison should reach one of the sons or children of this woman. This woman she's speaking about in the third person is herself. If I got any benefit from your coin. Meaning that she's obviously telling him that she can't find the coin, but she's also taking a shvuah that she herself did not benefit, or she didn't take it. She wasn't stealing the coin. She just didn't have it. It was lost and she was unable to find the coin. Amru loyu yamim uatim ad shemeit echad mibana. Wasn't long before one of her children passed away. Obviously, they see a correlation between her shvuah and the passing of the child. Ukushashamo chachamim badavar. Chachamim got wind of this. Amru ma mishin nishba be'emet. Someone who tells the truth. Kach. This is what happens. Hanishba al sheker lachad kama v'kamo. Concerning somebody who's going to lie, the dangers of shvuot are way too high. The risks or the implications of taking a shvuah are too dangerous. And therefore, we don't want people taking shvuot. Gemara says, "Mataima iancho." Why did she get punished? Gemara wants, okay, if she told the truth, then why is she getting punished? Gemara says, "Ishtarshe la makom dinar," because she benefited from the place where the coin was. I mean that if she was to bake the bread without the coin in it, she would have had to have more flour or more ingredients in there. So she did benefit from the dinar because it displaced where she would have had to put flour anyway. So then, omai minishneshba be'emet. Then how could you say here, someone who tells the truth, she didn't tell the truth. Ela kemishneshba be'emet. Not someone who tells the truth, but someone who seemingly told the truth. She didn't think she was lying. She thought she was telling the truth when she took the shvuah. Certainly someone who is clearly lying and knows they're lying when they take the shvuah, that there would be a problem. The truth is that there are a number of interesting factors here. The one of which is something that you're mentioning, which is actually, this is Shnei Batzoret, which means that it was not easy times. And yet this woman, this Amana, is giving bread to an Ani. So this is a woman who is doing staka, is doing something really nice or amazing during Shnei Batzoret. And despite that, the power of the Shavuah was that it impacted on her. Number two is what Tosafot points out over here, that we have a principle that when someone makes a shvuah bonus, someone makes a shvuah accidentally, without intentionally lying, then the shvuah is null and void. For instance, if someone thought someone had eaten something, and they take a shvuah that they hadn't eaten it, and they didn't remember, or they forgot about it. So that's what we call shvuah on sin, but a person forgot, or made a mistake. In that case, we say that they are null and void, or the shvuah is not binding. Or we had the incident where the Gemara in the Dorim spoke about two Amoraim who were quoting Rav, and they both took a Shavuah that this is what Rav said, and they only took a Shavuah that this is what Rav said. They went to Rav, and Rav told them which one of them was right. So the other one said, didn't I take a Shvat Sheker? And the Rav says, no, Libcha Nascha, that your heart caused you to be anes. That's what you remembered. That's what you thought. When you took the Shvua, you really believed that you were taking a true Shvua. Same thing should be true of this woman over here. She's taking a Shvua. When she took the Shvua, she was taking it based on what she knew, the knowledge that she had, that she was telling the truth. And so Tosafot in the end says, V'yishlamar, Da'ocha gabi pikadon avala lehizaher yoter. Here she was responsible for someone else's property, and she should have been more careful, l'shamro hitev, to take care of it, meaning that she was negligent, in a sense, in taking care of the person's property, which was deposited with her. She was a trustworthy woman. She put it into the flour, but which maybe wasn't the best idea. It might have been a good hiding place, but it put it at risk that she could bake it. Vavala lasuke adata shetavoli deshvua. And she should have considered the possibility that if, when this happens, there's a possibility she'll lose the coin in the flour or bake it into bread. She won't remember about it. And that was the, we'll call it the shugeg, or the problem here. Not necessarily that she took the shvua because she was telling the truth, or she thought she was telling the truth, but she should have considered all this up front when she took on the responsibility of other people's property. And that's in general that way, that when you take responsibility for other people's property, it comes with a greater burden. That person has to take much greater care with other people's property than with their own property. It's usually the opposite of the way people think. Normally people think that their property is primary and other people's property is secondary. But it's important that if one's going to be responsible, that they do it in a way that doesn't compromise the other person's property. And that's what happened here. Because she put it inside of her flower, it put at risk this other person's property. The aim of the Gemara here is to demonstrate the severity or the danger in Shavuot. And that's what comes out of this story, which is that over some minute detail, this woman lost her son because of a Shavua like that. And the Gemara says, that's risky if we're going to put up these almanot to take Shavuot over this item. And even if the Rambam is right, that they're not worried about the Shavuot, if we're going to press them to take a Shavua, the ramifications of that are serious. Or even if they are afraid of it, we see here that there are risks, even when a person thinks they're telling the truth. And we're going to see here in the Gemara why they might take a Shavua, even though it's not necessarily true. Imi shumha, ma iria almana. Why are we only focused on almana? Afilu grusha nami. A divorcee also has to collect her ketubah. Why don't we demand over there that she not take a shvua, but take a neder instead because of this risk of shvua? But you're only worried about the widows, you're not worried about the grushot, as well as the fact that chayin, as the Gemara mentions in other places, applies to grushot just as well as it applies to almanot, on a lesser level, but the issue of chayin should be an issue there as well. So, alama, amar abzeira, amar shmol, lo shanu ela almana. It's only true by the almana. Al grusha mashbir nota. When it comes to grusha, we do force her to take a shavua. Almana shiny. The almana is different. And this is where the main issue comes up and where it's very similar to the story before, which is the bahayi ana, the katarcha kamei diatme, achi alore hetera. This is one of the main reasons that people steal in general, which is the fact that she works on the estate, meaning that she takes care of the estate, takes care of the yitomim in the estate, and she says, I'm getting nothing back in return for all that I'm doing for the estate. So she's more ahead there to say that I can take a little bit here, take a little bit here, cut some corners here, and over time she takes money out of the estate for her own benefit, which she's not necessarily entitled to. That has to be deducted from her ketubah if she comes to collect in the end. But she again is more ahead there and says, they're not paying me, so I deserve some remuneration for that. I deserve some payment. And she will collect money. Then she'll take the shvua, saying, I never got my ketubah. And honestly, she doesn't believe her got her ketubah. But it'll be similar to the case that we saw before the almanah, not thinking that she's taking a little here, taking a little there, and the shvua is not true because of that. So that's our fear here with regards to an almanah. I think the whole issue here is exactly that, that people feel that, look, I pay my dues to the shul. If I pay my dues to the shul, then I'm entitled to take a little here, take a little there. Or same thing here, that people feel when they are in these types of situations and that they're giving, that they're entitled to something in return. And therefore, they justify their behavior, their action by saying, I'm really not taking, I'm really not stealing. I'm just getting paid back for what I do anyway. So it's important to worry about this, because if that is the mentality of people, she will end up taking a shvua, thinking that she is totally fine. But we know that there's this risk in the back that some of this has happened along the way. And therefore, it's going to be dangerous, or there'll be ramifications that are not well thought out or unbeknownst to her that are going to take place. And that's what we're trying to prevent. That's not true by a grusha. A grusha is out of the estate. She's gone. Therefore, she doesn't have this issue of moda heter. So there, we don't have a problem having her take a shvua by the almana, where the issue is that she's in the estate and that she's involved with the estate. There we have a bigger issue. Amar Yehuda, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu Babel, Rav Ushmuel, the Amrei Tarvayu, Rav and Shmuel both say, Lo shanu ela bebeitin. It's only true inside of beitin. Av chutz lebeitin mashbin ota. Outside of beitin, we are mashbin ota. V'ini, is that really true? Va Rav lo megavek tuba l'armalato. Don't we have stories or evidence of the fact that Rav never collected a ktuba for a widow? Where it says, kasho, that is a problem for this standing or this statement that Rav and Shmuel both believe this. Misura matnahachi. That's the way that this story or this information was told over in Surah. Surah being the city of Rav. So in the city where Rav was the Mora Da'atra, the din here was said over in the name of both Rav and Shmuel, that both of them say that we don't do the Shvua in Beit Din, but we do the Shvua outside of Beit Din. The reason being that a Shvua inside of Beit Din is much more severe or much more dangerous than outside of Beit Din. And as Rashi notes over here, Shvuat ha-dayanim shel Torahi. Shvuat ha-dayanim is min ha-Torah. V'nakat sefer Torah b'yadeh. Then she has to hold an object of mitzvah in her hand when she takes the shvua. I mean, you have to hold the sefer Torah, you have to hold tefillin, some object of kedusha that you have to hold. U'mashbi'a la b'shemo b'kinuim. And the shvua involves the shem Hashem or one of the kinuim of Hashem. So this is a much more severe and serious shvua, including what's called the kitat chefetz and shvua b'shem Hashem. On the other hand, outside of Beit Din, none of those apply. You do not have the Nikita Tchevetz, and you do not use the Shem Hashem, but rather, as Rashi says over here, that Shva Derabanan Bikililat Arur, that they do it with an Arur, V'lo Nakat Midei V'Enonshin Al-Kach, Al-Kach, and it doesn't have as severe repercussions or ramifications. I mean, the same way that it's a lower level of Shva, the punishments also are not as severe. Even though it sounds like from the story we saw before by the Almana, that's exactly what she did. It sounds like she didn't take a shvuah, but it didn't sound like she took an arur, or a klala, that this terrible thing should happen to me if I was lying. So the Rishonim deal with that. A number of them suggest that she really took a shvuah. That was just, the Gemara here is just giving you the bottom line about it, but she really took a shvuah, in Beit Din. But here, Rashi gives this distinction, as Tosafot points out, that Rashi, we saw this actually in Ketubot, it's also found in the Rashi in Shvuot, that Rashi makes a distinction between Shvuot de'oraita and Shvuot de'rabanan, which is that Shvuot de'oraita require this, Shvuot de'rabanan do not require Nikita Tchefetz and the Shvuah b'Shem Hashem. The Balei HaTosafot disagree and say it has nothing to do with de'oraita or de'rabanan, it has to do with whether you're in Beit Din or outside of Beit Din. In those other two locations, they criticize Rashi for making the distinction between de'oraita and de'rabanan. And over here, Tosafot notes it and says, Rashi got it right this time. Because here he makes a distinction between in Beit Din and out of Beit Din, rather than the distinction between the Oraita and Derabanan. Right, so now that was Besura in the city of Rav. Benarda Matnuhachi. In Narda, meaning which is the city of Shmuel, this is the Mesorah they had. Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Lo Shanuel of Beit Din. Aval Chutz Beit Din Mashbin Ota. So here they only attribute that statement to Shmuel, not to Rav. So you can see the difference here between the cities, which is in the city of Shmuel, they attribute to Shmuel this distinction between in Beit Din and out of Beit Din, whereas in the city of Rav, they attribute it to both of them, both Shmuel and Rav. Whereas Rav, in Arda, they believe, thinks, Rav Amar, afilu chutz de Beit Din, nami ein mashbin ota. That Rav says, outside of Beit Din, you can't be mashbin ota, period. Rav the Tamei, Rav is l'shitato, the Rav lo megabik tubal armaloto. So this is what the Gemara asked on the previous version of Rav and Shmuel, which is that the Mesorah was that Rav did not collect ktubot on behalf of widows. Because they stopped asking for a shvuah, they had no vehicles for ascertaining the truth of the claim of this woman. And so therefore they stopped giving out the ktubot or allowing them to collect out of the estate. Now she has a right to stay in the estate. She remains in the estate, she can get mizonot, she can live off the estate, she's fine. Her real issue is if she wants to get married and then wants to leave the estate and try to collect her ktubah, that's where she'll have an issue, which is that Rav seems to be unwilling to allow the almanot to collect. Oh, v'liyadro, v'ligavyo. Why doesn't Rav use the takana that we have mentioned in the Mishnah? The whole point of the Mishnah was that they stopped using Shvuot and they moved over to a neder. So why doesn't Rav use the vehicle or the takana that was put in place by Rabbi Gamliel Azakain? B'shnei d'Rav kilei nidori. So this is the same problem that we had with Shvuot according to the Rambam. Rav has in his time with nidarim, which is that people were willy-nilly taking the nidarim. It did not have the impact necessary to use it as a method for verifying the truth that someone spoke. You know, these are basically lie detector tests. Right? The way that we check whether someone is lying or not is their willingness to take a shvua or their willingness to take a neder. That all assumes that these people would be reluctant to take a shvua or neder when they were lying because they're scared of a shvua or scared of a neder. If people don't have that feeling towards the shvua or neder, then it no longer works as being a lie detector test or a means for ensuring that we're getting the truth, because they'll take the neder whether they're lying or not. And so that's what Rav is faced with, the problem that he has no way to verify when somebody is telling the truth or not. So now, Haidatai, the Kamed Rav Huna. So this woman who came before Rav Huna, Amarla, Mai Aved Lach, she says to her, what am I going to do for you? Derav lo migavei ktuba l'armeloto. Because Rav was unwilling to collect a ktuba on behalf of a widow, because she couldn't take a shvuah, she couldn't take a neder, so therefore I can't help you get your ktuba. You're stuck in this situation. So amalei midehu taima ela dilma nektitna midei miktubati. So the woman was a smart woman and says, the whole reason that you're worried about me collecting my ktuba is because maybe I preemptively already collected a portion of my ktuba, and you need me to take a shvuah or take a neder to show that I'm entitled to whatever it is that's there. Chai Hashem tzvakot im ne'aneti miktubati klum. She jumps and takes the shvuah without him asking for the shvuah. She voluntarily takes the shvuah and says, I take a shvuah that I got no benefit from my ktubah. So Amar Rav Huna, moderav bikofetzet. This woman jumped the gun and took the shvuah. So Rav says we won't compel someone to take a shvuah, but if they voluntarily took the shvuah without us asking for it, then we do believe her in that case. So this woman who jumped to take the shvuah, we will believe her that she's telling the truth, because the way the Mishnah words it, it ain't much being. We don't force the women to take a shvuah because we're afraid of having people take shvuot that have these types of ramifications. But over here, where she voluntarily took the shvuah without us asking for it, then fine, we have the shvuah in hand now. We have the information we need, and therefore we can give her, allow her to collect on her ktubah. Haidatai lekamei deraba b'Rav Huna. So here we have Rav Huna over here was a Talmid of Rav, right? And now we have also another woman who came before Rav Bar Rav Huna, who also we'll see is a Talmid of Rav. So he says, listen, I have the same problem. Rav Huna had the same problem, which is I can't provide you with a ktubah because you don't have a means for you to collect your ktubah. Vaba Mari lo migave ktuba la amarloto. And my father wasn't willing to do it. So man, he has Rav, and Rav Huna is a Talmid of Rav, both who didn't collect from an armala. And so he's saying, I'm bound by my father, and I'm bound by my father's Rebbe, that they said that you can't collect a ktuba for an armala. So amarlei havli mizone. She says, okay, if I can't leave the estate, at least allow me to live off the estate, get mizonot from the estate, which she is entitled to as long as she doesn't collect her ktubah. Amrala, mizone namid litlach. He says that you also are not entitled to mizonot. The Amr of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, hotovat ktubatab beitin in la mizonot. A woman who goes to beitin in order to collect her ktubah is no longer entitled to mizonot. We saw this in the Gemara in Ktubot, that once the woman makes the decision to leave the estate, she's no longer entitled to benefit from the estate except for her collection of her ktubah. So that as long as she remains under the auspices of her old husband, then she's entitled to live off the estate or benefit from the estate. A woman who is going to collect her ktubah is making a decision that either she's ready to get married or she's ready to leave the estate. That means that she's no longer under the auspices of her husband who passed away, and she's no longer entitled to the mizonot or from monies out of the estate except for her ktubah. So the decision to go to Beit Din already makes it obvious that she intends either to get married or to leave the estate, and that decision in itself doesn't allow her any longer to collect Mizonot. We also saw this with regard to Shvi'it, if you remember, whether Shvi'it is Mishametet. When is Shvi'it Mishametet alone? So we said there that a woman's ketubah is not subject to Shvi'it, Ash Zakfa Alav Vimilvet, until she makes it a obligation. When she goes to court, that it makes it into an obligation. So these are, by going to court, you change the nature of her relationship with the estate now. Becomes a loan instead of simply the right to a ketubah, and it takes her out of the estate. So Amrale, Afchua le Kurse, Kepetre Avdili. I mean, these are very sharp women here. She says that, flip over his chair. Now that's an expression which means that he should be taken down from his position of authority. I mean, let's say he's sitting on a quote-unquote throne. What it means to overturn the throne is that he should lose his stature or his position over here. Why? Kebetre avdili. He is taking up the psak of two different individuals. If you look carefully, with regards to the inability to collect the ketubah, he quoted his father, Rav Huna, and Rav. On the other hand, when it comes to her being excluded from the estate, it was Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. So she says, you're taking on the position of Rav in one case and the position of Shmuel in the other case. Be consistent. If you want to be like Shmuel, be consistent, and then you should entitle me to my ketubah, because Shmuel allowed the collection of a ketubah. If you hold like Rav, then hold like Rav also. He doesn't have this memory about collecting from the estate, then I should be able to get my mizonot. Take your choice. You're being machmir on me like the shtei shitot. So this is very interesting. Avchua le kursei. Ve tarzua. He got up, and they flipped over his chair. In order that this be the expression of her curse, should come true through the flipping over of his chair, and not with him really losing his position. They wanted the curse to be taken care of that way. So in order to relieve the klala from Rabbi Bar Rav Huna, they did it in this way, so that would be the expression of the klala. V'afilo achi lo ifrak michulsha. He was never able to escape illness from that point forward because of this curse of this woman. I mean, that it had an impact, despite the fact that they did this and they flipped over his chair. He still was plagued by illness afterwards because of this issue with this almanah. I don't know how ill he was, but what you're saying makes sense, which is that maybe the illness was to the point that he couldn't serve in his position fully because that was an expression of her klala. But you see here, first of all, the power of the almanah, which the Torah says, that when the almanah cries out to Hashem, that Hashem responds, and that you have to be very careful when you're dealing with itomim and almanot. But also over here, that this woman making a point that you can't make this a halachic impossibility for the almanot to deal with situations. If to give her a relief somehow, either relief through collection of the ketubah or relief by staying in the estate. So Amalei Rav Yehuda, Rav Yirmiyah, Birya, Adra Bebeitin. So a case came before Rav Yehuda. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm a Shmuel. So Rav Yehuda is a Talmud of Shmuel. He also had to be a Talmud of Rav, but was Talmud of Shmuel. So he says to Rav Yirmiyah Birya, Adro beBeitin, I want you to have her take a neder in Beitin, Vashbav chutz leBeitin, and I want you to have her take a Shmuel outside of Beitin. Velete kalo, and I want to hear about this back. I want the word to come back to me in Beitin. Filippo beUdne, and that it will fall in my ears that I hear this. Debeina, Kihechi de Avid Bamase, because I need this to become public. What Rav Yehuda was trying to do is dispel the shita of the Talmidim of Rav. That the Talmidim of Rav he felt were wrong, and that was the wrong psak halacha. So what Rav Yehuda wants to do is entrench the shita of Shmuel. And therefore he says, I want this to become a very public issue. So he had an almanah that came to him. So he had the almanah, first of all, take a neder in Beit Din. And then he also had them have her take a shvua outside of Beit Din. Not because it was necessary to take both of them, but he wanted huge publicity surrounding this because he wanted to dispel from these Talmidim of Rav that that was the proper way to conduct oneself. And rather, this is the way to do it. We're going to take care of the almanot, and we're going to paskin like Shmuel, that the almanot are entitled in these cases, and we're going to do it either through a neder or through a shvua outside of Beit Din, like Shmuel says. At outside of Beit Din, you're allowed to take a shvua, or in Beit Din, you can take a neder. And that is like the shita of Shmuel, at least according to the Narada, according to the people in Surah, that was also the shita of Rav. The problem was that we see strong evidence that Rav did not think that because both Rav and his Talmidim were unwilling to collect ketubot on behalf of Almanot. So that's why here Rabbi Yehuda comes to dispel that view of halacha, and therefore he tries to make a huge public display out of this issue. Okay, Gufa, Amar Rabbi Zeira Mishmuel, Lo Shanu El Almana. Aval grusha mashbin ota. is only true by an almana, but by a grusha, we do not have her take a shvua. Where it says, grusha, the adrolo. Wait a minute, so if a grusha takes a neder instead of a shvua, that won't work. Va shalchumitam, then they send from over there. Ich plonita bat ploni, kabalit gita min yado d'acha bar hidia, d'mitkare aya mori. So they had an incident of divorce. Now, the case here seems to be a case where the woman was from Bavel, and she and her husband went to Eretz Yisrael, and then they got divorced. So now, the woman wants to collect her ketubah, but the man's estate or man's money is back in Bavel. So she has to go back to Bavel to collect, but the divorce happened in Eretz Yisrael. So shalchu mitam means from an Eretz Yisrael, they sent back to Bavel, that this woman has a right to collect a ketubah because she came before us in court. And this is what happened. That this woman, plonita bat ploni, so-and-so, the daughter of so-and-so, kabalit gita min yadod achabar yideya. She got her get from her husband. This is the name of her husband. Dimit kare, that is also called ayamori. Now this is important from the Balei HaTosafot yesterday. The Balei HaTosafot yesterday say that when the Gemara says, when the Takana Hitkin Rabbi Gamliel Zakein, Sheakotev Ish Ploni, V'chol Shum Sheyeshlo, and any name that he had. There are many that believe that means that they wrote the person's name, and then they had this boilerplate language and any other name that he has. Tosafot in yesterday's daf disagreed and said that you have to write the name of the individual and every single name that they had. One of his proofs is this Gemara right here, which is here the Gemara says that they called him they wrote specifically what his other name was. And so therefore you see they put both names into the get. Vinadart vasart perot shebolam ala. And she took a neder that restricted all fruits of the world on her. Delo kabalit miktubata. That she had taken nothing in payment of her ktuba. Ella. And they list what she said. She was honest. She had gotten certain things. And that was, she got a glofkara, echad, which you can see here on the oruch, inside the Masorah of the Shatz. The oruch says that it is a avashel tzemer, it's ksut avashel tzemer, some thick wool, piece of clothing, whether it's a cloak, or whether the way that others suggest over here, that it was some sort of sheet, throw, blanket, that was made out of this very thick wool. But she had gotten that. The sefer tehillim echad, so interesting. She had got a sefer tehillim. The Sefer Iyov, umemeshalot bluim, and Mishlei that was a little torn up or a little worn down. So this is what she got. She had taken from the estate. Interesting woman, what she got out of the estate. She had this one wool item plus these three sfarim that she took out of the estate, which the Beit Din in Eretz Yisrael assessed and says, v'shamnun b'chamisha maneh. And we say they're worth 500 zuz. So she's entitled to collect the remainder of her tubah. Which is when she comes to you, she could present this document to you. Let her collect the remainder of her ketubah from the estate when she comes to you. So now the Gemara here sees in this incident that they grusha. This is a case of divorce. And the way they allowed her to collect her ketubah was through a neder, not through a shvua. You said before that this vehicle of using a neder versus a shvua, we only said it by an almanah. We don't say it by a grusha. The Gemara gave the reason for that is that she's mora heter. So that doesn't apply to a grusha, and therefore we demand a shvua from a grusha, not a neder. Yet, this document that came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel indicated that she took a neder and not a shvua. So that goes against what we had suggested before, that grushot are not entitled to this relief of taking a neder rather than a shvua. So the Gemara answers over here, Amar Ravashi, how get yivamin hava? That was not a regular divorce, but rather a get yivamim. Now Rashi over here says the get yivamim is yivamah aya zeh shenatan la get. The person who gave her the get was not her husband, but one of the brothers who should have performed yibum with her. Rashi says it wasn't chalitza, but if you remember from the Gemara in Yivamot, that if a yivam gives a get to a potential yivamah, it's posel her from performing yibum afterwards. She still needs chalitza in order to release her from the obligations of yibum, but she may no longer perform yibum from the get. The get is posel. And so that's what Rashi claims over here, that this brother gave her a get to be posel her on the other brothers. And now she is coming to collect from her original husband, that she was widowed from. There's going to be no Yibum over here anymore, because he was poseller from Yibum. If she's not going to be Yibum, then she has a right to collect her ketubah from her husband's estate. And that's what she's coming to do. Tosafot criticizes Rashi's explanation, because he says that a get does not entitle a woman to collect her ketubah. You need a chalitza in order to collect. She's not released from the Yibum until there's chalitza. Until there's chalitza, there is no collection of the ketubah. Therefore, Tosafot says that the case here is where one of the brothers did perform Yibum with her and then gave her a get afterwards. So why is this grusha different than another grusha? Because of the fact that her first husband's property is allocated or encumbered towards the ketubah. Again, she took care of her husband's property until the Yibum happened. And therefore, you have this possibility again of Mora Heter. That she is Mora Heter for herself, that she takes from it because she was taking care of the estate on behalf of the brothers until one of them married her. So you still have, you have that risk again that she took for herself because she was taking care of the estate. Then that brother divorces her. After he performs Yibum with her, divorces her, and that's the case here. In defense of Rashi, others suggest that the word get yivamim sometimes means chalitza. That the word get, as we've seen in this Masechet already, the word get is a generic term for a document, doesn't necessarily mean a divorce. So when it says get yivamim, it means the document of a yivama. The document of a yivama is a chalitza. So you could argue that, Rashi doesn't say explicitly, but you could argue along the lines of Rashi that that is the situation here. All right, now, Hitkin Rabban Gamliel Azakein, Shidei no deret. That Rabban Gamliel was mentakein that she'd take a neder in lieu of the shvua, that we weren't willing to have her take the shvua. Rather, she should take a neder. Amar Avuna, lo shanu ela b'shelo niseit. That's only true if she has yet to marry again. Aval niseit ein madirin ota. Once she remarries, we don't allow her to take a neder. Now, when she goes and gets remarried, she is entitled to collect her ketubah of the estate. If she has to yet collect her ketubah before she gets married, then we don't allow her to take a neder anymore. It's only prior to her marriage we let her take a neder. Niseit maitaima. Why is it that once she marries, we don't allow her to take a neder? Demefer labal. Because we're afraid that the husband will nullify the neder. I mean that she takes a neder. The point of the neder is that she now will be stuck under this neder if she was lying. And therefore she's going to only tell us the truth because the neder is not just inconvenient, it's very difficult to live with the nether. But in the case where she's married, she has a way to undo the nether. That is, her husband will be made for the nether. So she'll go to Beit Din, take the nether as if she's telling the truth, go home, and the husband will be made for the nether, and now she'll be free and clear, and the nether has no impact on her. So, ki lo niseit nami. So when she doesn't get married also, the chi minsaba made for labal. Once she gets remarried, then the husband, her new husband, will be made for it. That we already know from the Gemara Nidarim, ein Baal Mefer Bikodmim. That the Baal doesn't have a right to be Mefer Nidarim that pre-existed their marriage. He's entitled to be Mefer Nidarim that happened under his watch, but he doesn't have a right to be Mefer Nidarim that took place prior to his marriage. Where it says, V'nichu Shtelma Azla Gabi Chacham V'shari Lo. Why don't we worry about the fact that she'll go to a Chacham and he'll be Matir Neder? If you're afraid of hafarat nidarim, why aren't you afraid of hatarat nidarim? Kasavar tzarich lefaret et aneder. Says this is according to the one who says, you have to be mifaret, you have to explicate on what exactly the neder was. That the chacham can't do hatarat nidarim without details about the neder that the individual took. Without those details, he can't be matir the neder. And therefore, by her telling over the details of the neder, it'll become clear that she took this nether and Beit Din be able to tell the truth, and he's not going to be matir such a nether, because the whole point of that nether is that it shouldn't become triggered. There's an important Tosfot over here, but I'm going to defer the speaking about the Tosfot till later on in the Gemara, because he uses information that you need from later on in the Gemara, and then we'll come back and note it. So just take note that we have to mention something about that. Rav Nachman Amar, afilu niseit. Nachman says, no problem. Even if she gets married, she can take a nether. So where it says, niseit, vadai mefer labal. Wait a minute, why would Rav Nachman allow such a thing? Because once she gets married, of course the husband's going to be made to nullify the nether. He has no reason that he wants this nether intact. He doesn't want to have his wife be bound by such a nether. So when it says, the Madrina la Birabim, they make her take her nether Birabim, which does not have at least Hatara. Here the Gemara seems to indicate that if you do the nether Birabim, not only does it not have Hatara, but it also does not have Hafara. That is not so clear. We'll see later on in the Tosafot. Meitevei, niseit govak tubata. If she gets married, govak tubata im nadra. Then she allowed to collect the tubah if she took a nether. My love, nadra hasta, that she took the nether now. And it's saying that she's able to collect her tubah. Where it says, no, the nadra mikara, that she took the nether prior to the marriage, and there it's fine. Vatanya, don't we have a bright niseit noderet? So here you can't play games. It's clear in this braita that she got married, then took a nether, and then was entitled to collect her ketubah. So you see that even when she gets married, we allow her to take a nether. This is supportive of Rav Nachman Shita. Tanayehi, that happens to be a machloket tanaim. Tika the mandamar, nether shudar b'rayabim, yesh lo hafara. Because there is a mandamar that a nether that is taken in public has the ability to be nullified by the husband. And there's another mandamar that says that there is no hafara for such a nether. Do you have to detail the nether in order to get hatarat hacham? Do you have to detail the nether? Rav Nachman says you don't need to mefarat the nether. Rav Papa amar tzarich. Rav Papa says you do have to mefarat the nether. Rav Nachman amar eno tzarich. Di amar tzarich. Because if you tell us that she does need it, zimnin the guys lay the duberei, v'chachmai the mashama mefer. So that the problem is that when you say that they have to be afraid the neder, then you're at risk for her or whoever it is telling the truth. Because that the rov or the Talmud Chacham can only work with the information that he's given. It's a big problem in psak halacha. So people who want to get a certain psak halacha many times are selective with disclosure. They give the Rav only the information that they think is relevant, or they want the Rav to work with, but they leave out important details that would change the psak. I mean, that the Rav can only give a psak based on the information that he has given. But if there's information that's missing, his psak halacha can't be relevant to that information. And that's what he said will happen here. Even if you demand a pirut of the neder, that doesn't mean you're going to get the truth. Because the individual could be mifareit, just portions, or selective disclosure about what they said. The Chacham will be matar based on that, even though he doesn't have the full information. So demanding pirut and nether is not going to solve the problem in this instance. On the other hand, Rapap Amar, Tzarech Mishom Milta Di Isura. We have to do it because there's some times where there's Isur involved. Because if we allow the individual just to come in and say, I want to be matar the nether, and the Chacham does it, then we don't ask any questions, you're going to run into difficulties, which is, maybe the person took this nether because of an isur, kagon, like our case here, of givoy ketubah, when the ones who collected ketubah, it was taken because we wanted to become asur, we want to be triggered by the fact that if she's not telling the truth, if you give a hatarat nedarim in that case, it's going to undermine the whole point. And even there, where you have selective disclosure, the Chacham can at least, with the limited information that he gets from the individual, at least can ask questions, or he could try to delve into the matter and clarify what is happening. Tosafot over here brings a story from the Yerushalmi about Pirut HaNeder, that there was this individual who came before Rabbi Bon, which is Rabbi Abon, who came before him and said, I need you to be Matir Neder. He said, what was the Neder? Then there is that I won't get any profits. So Rabbi Bon says, who takes a nether like that? That I'm not going to do anything that makes me profits. Of course he's going to be matar nether. But then he said, you know what, why don't you tell me a little bit about this nether? So the guy starts to explain to him that he was a gambler. And he had taken a nether that he would no longer benefit or make profits from gambling. So Rabbi Bon says, how great are the words of the Chachamim that you have to be mefarate the nether? Because up front, I was willing to be mat to the nether because the nether made no sense and I shouldn't be mat to the nether. But after I got to the bottom of it, I realized that the guy was only giving me a portion of the information. And that's the reason for pirut the nether. The idea is that when you delve into it, you get a little more clarification. Whether that's from the fact that the language itself gives away. Say, what was the nature of the nether? Explain to me the language. And that is a machloket in terms of pirut haneder. Rashi says pirut haneder here is the explanation for the reason behind the neder. Tosafot in other places says that pirut haneder is you have to give the language, the exact language of the neder. But the language itself should give away at least a portion of why it happened or what took place here. So even according to Tosafot, where the pirut is about the language, that in and of itself should give you a hint or more information that there's something going on besides simply a neder over here. But either way, that's why you would demand Pirut HaNeder, is to escape from people trying to get Hatarat Nedarim when they really don't deserve Hatarat Nedarim. And we saw this when we discussed this in Masechet Nedarim, that the Geonim basically stopped the whole process of Hatarat Nedarim because it became a joke. People were taking Nedarim and then getting Hatarat Nedarim for everything. So they weren't taking their Nedarim seriously because they just unwound everything they did. And so in the end, you can see that Hatarat Neder could defeat the whole purpose of a Neder. And that's what they're trying to stop here, that Hatarat Nedarim doesn't just become an easy exit from any Neder that one takes. It's not. Anoseh Nashim Be'Aveira Pasul Ad Shidor Hana'a. So this is a case where a Kohen marries a woman who is not entitled to marry. For instance, he marries a Grusha, or a Kohen Gadol marries an Almana. These are women that are psulot to him. As far as the woman is concerned, she becomes a Chlala because of this marriage, if they have Biyah. Children that are born from that marriage are Chalalim. They do not have the status of a Kohen. On the other hand, the husband or this Kohen, while he is married to this woman, he is Pasul Le'Avodah. He has the status of a Chlal as long as he's married to her. As soon as he divorces her, then he is restored to his previous state as a Kohen. The problem that we have is that a person who's married to a woman or someone who loves a woman, it's not simple that they divorce them. Just because they divorce them doesn't mean they're not going back to them. Doesn't mean that this is not going to continue afterwards. So what the Chachamim established is, in the Mishnah and Bechorot, we see this, Hanoseh Nashim Ba'Aveira. Someone who married these women, these inappropriate women, Pasul. He remains Pasul to the Kuna, Ad Shidor Hana'a. Until he takes a neder that he will not get benefit from this woman, he will not return to this woman. He has to take a neder that shows he won't go back to marrying this woman. Then we allow him to continue to be a Kohen and work as a Kohen. V'tani Allah, Noder V'Oved Yored U'Migaresh. The neder is so powerful that if he takes this neder, even before the divorce, we allow him to do the avoda at that point. Once he already has taken a neder, we know for certain that he's going to divorce this woman to uphold this neder, and therefore he can do avoda immediately. After avoda, he can go and do the geushin. He can actually divorce the woman because we know once he's taken the neder that this marriage has effectively been terminated. V'amart inu tzarich leferet et neder. If you say like Rav Nachman that he doesn't have to explain the neder, lichush dima azel legabi chacham v'sharile. Then why don't we worry about this fact, the same thing that you're telling me here by the case of the Almana, why don't you worry about Hatarat Nidarim, that he'll go to the Chacham, not explain what the Neder was for, he'll get Hatarat Nidarim, and then he'll go back to this woman, exactly for what the Neder was put in place for, where he can override it or undermine it. So where it says, the Madrinan Lei Birabim, that they make him take a Neder Birabim, the same suggestion that the Gemara had before with regards to the Almana, that she takes a neder birabim, there is no hatarat or hafarat nidarim in that case. We saw that that was a machloket as to whether that's the case or not. The Gemara says, anich leman damar neder shudar birabim ein lo hafarat. That makes sense according to the one who says that a neder that's taken in public does not have hafarat. Public here means in front of 10 people. That does not have hafarat because since the neder was taken in rabim, the only way to undermine or unwind the neder is that to have the rabim be matter the neder, which you can't do. You can never get the effective rabim to be matter the neder, and that's why it's a permanent neder. But according to one who says you can be matter a neder be rabim, ma'ika the meimar. Then what are you going to do in this case? Al-dat rabim. That the person you take them take a neder al-dat rabim, which is that you make them do it as the Rabbeinu Tam explains over here. Al-dat rabim means al-dat ploni u-ploni. It was by or under the auspices of so and so. And you list the two people and you have to name the two people in the neder. I mean, you can't just say al-dat rabim like a generic term. You have to specify those individuals. And when we take it al-dat rabim, then there is no way to undermine or unwind this neder because those two people are the responsible parties and without them you can't be matir the neder. And they seemingly will not give their acquiescence to unwind the nether because the purpose of the nether here is to be bound by the nether and not to unwind it. Damar Meimar, a Meimar says, Hilchoto, the loch is afilu man damar nether shudar berabim yeshlo afara. Even according to the one who says that a nether shudar berabim is mutar, to be made for, to get hatara for it, that is only true berabim. Al dat rabim in lo hafara. But when it comes to al-dat rabim, that everybody agrees is not able to be nitar, al-yidei hatarat nidarim. V'hani mile l'davar reshut. The only time that you cannot unwind it is if it's only for something that is for their own personal gain or benefit. You can't unwind the netter for them. Aval advar mitzvah yesh lo hafara. But if it's for something that is for the public's benefit, then it does have hafara. Kiao makre de dardike. There was this teacher of children, the Adre Ravacha dat rabim. Ravacha forced him to take a neder al dat rabim, that he would not teach anymore. He forced him out of the profession. Dava pasha being okay. Because he was inappropriate with the children. Now, today, that terminology has a very negative connotation in terms of pashabin. Okay, Rashi says over here, it was that he hit them, that he was not so gentle with the children, and he hit them a little too hard. And so, Ravacha didn't want him teaching anymore. But, Vajre Ravina. Ravina reinstated him as a teacher. There was nobody who was as successful a teacher as him that was able to midayek and teach the children as properly as he was. And he was a loss to the public at large because he was no longer a teacher. Right. So you see here that the Dvar Mitzvah here where he was teaching and it was for the benefit of the Rabbim, there we allow you to unwind even a nether of that Rabbim. So that's what Tosfot says, exactly what you're saying. Obeinu Rabbeinu Tam Mishum, Demistama Nechlu the Rabbim Mishum Mitzvah. Because we can assume that that's the case, that the Rabbim would want this because of the mitzvah. Vodomer Rabbeinu Tam, Dadat, Hainu, Kishomer, Adat, Ploni, Uploni, Afilush Lo, Bifnehem. You don't have to have those two parties be there, but it's like, based on those two individuals, I'm taking the nether. Avaldat, Rabbim, Stama, Lav, Klumhu. That's what I mentioned to you before, that you can't just generically say it, you have to say Ploni, Uploni. Valdat, Yachid, Afopish, Pirate, Aldato, Yachol, Chacham, Natir. If he does it al dat yachid, meaning of an individual, then it doesn't have this standing. It has to be al dat rabim, meaning there's multiple people that he enumerates in the neder. And again, the reason that by makom mitzvah you can unwind it is because of the fact that mistama, we can assume that because of the needs of the rabim, that these individuals would agree that there should be hatarat neder over here. Tosafot raises a number of issues in this sugya which are important. One of which is something that we learned together in the Ketubot, the Gemara Nedarim, that for Hatarat Nedarim, when it involves another party, you're not allowed to be matan the neder, except in front of the other party. We had the cases there that if a person takes a neder hana from another individual, you have to release them in front of that individual. There, the Gemara says for two reasons, either mipnei abusha or mipnei chashad, either because of the embarrassment or because of the chashad that people will suspect that he's violating the neder. So since it involves another party, and then all of a sudden this person starts getting an offer from this other party, the person's going to think he's violating the neder. So in order that this other person knows he's not violating the neder, we do it in front of them so they're aware of the fact that the neder was nitar. Or mipnei abusha, in that the person who took this neder, there we spoke about who's busha, or what the embarrassment is. Different rishonim had different views about what exactly the busha is. But in order to not allow people to unwind nidarim, where they're bound to another party, we want the other party to be there. And so over here, how could it be that the woman is unwinding the neder and getting hatarat chachamim when it involves another party? The yitomim. Yitomim are a party to this because she's taking the neder to the yitomim in order to collect for a ketubah. So how can a chacham be matched to this neder without the yitomim being there? As soon as the yitomim are be there, we know that she can't get hatarat nedarim because they won't allow it. The yitomim need the neder to be in place to ensure that she was telling the truth. And so for that reason, how could it work over here? So Tosafot says something, which is interesting. He says that the necessity to be matir neder in front of another party is only the chatchila. B'diavad, you can be matir neder even without the other party being there. Meaning that that's only an institution derabbanon. The fact that you have to do it bifanaf, that's an institution derabbanon. And if a person does it or is matir neder even without the other party here, then the hatarah goes through, despite the fact that it wasn't done in front of the other parties. That's how Tosafot solves that problem. The other possibility is that a chacham doesn't know that, and therefore he's matir the neder without that knowledge. There are other Rishonim who disagree and say that you always have to do it bifanav, that bifanav is a demand or is a necessity in order to be matir the neder. But again, what we just said now is the possibility that the person doesn't give all the information. And the chacham is matir the neder without knowing that other piece of information, that it has to be done in front of the other party. That's one thing that Tosafot asks. The second thing Tosafot asks is, according to Rav Huna, who is the beginning of this part of the sugya, it says, Lo shanu ela bishlo niseit. It's only when she doesn't get married. Al bishlo niseit, ein madirin ota. Once she gets married, we don't take a neder. Tosafot asks over there, Why doesn't Rav Huna use the other possible solutions here? One of those solutions is what we got to at the end of the Gemara, that everybody agrees if you take a nether of that Rabim, there is no Hatara. So why doesn't Rav Huna make that suggestion over here as well? Even when she gets married, if she takes a nether of that Rabim, there won't be any Hatarat nether. So Tosafot gives two answers to that. First one is which is that Rav Huna disagrees with the Meimar. Rav Huna doesn't agree. That's Shita the Meimar, that a nether of that Rabim cannot have Hatara. But that's our Meimar Shita. Rav Huna disagrees with that, and that's why he can't use that method. The other possibility is that you're dealing with two different issues. One is an issue of Hatarat Nidarim, and one is Hafarat Nidarim. And even though the word Hafarat is used here with regards to the Nidarim, we know that from the Gemara Nidarim already, the words, they're conflated, the words sometimes. So even though it's using Hafarat, it really means Hatarat Nidar. And that Rav Huna agrees that with regards to Hatarat Nidarim, it cannot be done when there's Adat Rabim. On the other hand, with Hafarat Nidarim, the husband has the power to be made for the nether, because the empowerment of the husband is the fact that every nether that the woman takes is Aldat Bala. That's built in into every nether, and that's why the woman has the husband has the right to be made for the nether of his wife, is because by definition, the marriage brings him as a party to every nether, and therefore he can be made for the nether. And that is even Aldat Rabim, because the husband has rights of Hafarat. So even though there may not be rights of Hatarat Nidarim, Hafarat Nidarim might still work in that case. And that's maybe why Rav Huna does not use that answer. Tosfot also over here makes another suggestion. Why don't we have her take a nether that goes effective immediately and that the husband can't be made for? For instance, V'diroa shelo tuchal kikar zeh. Let her take a nether that she won't eat this loaf of bread if she collected any of her ketubah. And then we make her eat that loaf of bread right away. So then we have a way to check and verify, because she was eating this loaf of bread, and if she's lying, she wouldn't eat it because it would go against her nether. The fact that she eats it means that what she's saying is the truth. And it's not subject to hafarat because the nether's done already. She already ate the loaf of bread. There's nothing to be made for at that point in time because she already violated the nether. Here, Tosfot comes up with his shita, that these individuals are only afraid of a persistent isur, not a single isur. Tosfot says that wouldn't work because that's a one-time issue. The woman would be willing to say, you know, one time, what's the big deal? I'll take the nether, I'll eat the bread, and I'm done. Tosfot comes up with this thesis that there's a big difference between a single moment of Isur versus an extended or persistent Isur. And that's what I mentioned to you before, earlier in the sugya, that why a shvua and a nether might be different. Why they would take a nether more seriously than a shvua, because a shvua is a one-time thing, versus a nether where the nature of the nether they took was persistent. And Tosfot presents that over here, which is that even if we make her take her nether that can't have hafarat because it becomes immediately effective, that may not be a deterrent. Because in order to have deterrence, you need persistent isur, and that doesn't take place when we force the nether right away, and then it's not subject to hafarat, but it's also now subject to this persistent isur, which is the deterrent factor for the woman. Tosfot does ask also why the Gemara's questions over here are only on Rav Huna, aren't the questions on the Mishnah itself. The Mishnah itself is the one that suggests that you take a nether. Why is the Gemara challenging Rav Huna and saying to Rav Huna, oh, why are you right about this? Why can't we do this? Why can't we do that? We're asking all these questions from these Braitot. These Braitot should be a question on our Mishnah itself. So Tosfot says, nearly, because in our Mishnah, you can have the solution of a Meimar, which is it's Aldat Rabim. But for Rav Huna, that's not a solution, because Rav Huna doesn't, as Tosfot say, hold of this Aldat Rabim. And so because of that, the problem is for Rav Huna, not for the Mishnah. For the Mishnah, we have a way to get around all these problems by simply saying that she takes a nether Aldat Rabim, which is irreversible, and then none of these questions apply. But that answer we can't give on behalf of Rav Huna, because Rav Huna disagrees with the Meimar, and therefore the questions are really aimed at Rav Huna, or before Rav Huna Shita, rather than on the Mishnah as a whole. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Lamed Vav, Amud Aleph.